Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Character actor extraordinaire Peter Stormare, who you've seen in a million movies, I'll get into it with him, is going to join us for a very philosophical discussion. And then the news. First, there's LifeLock fraudsters posing as IRS agents, police officers, or power companies are tricking victims into sending online gift cards or reading gift card numbers over the phone as payment. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our info at risk on the internet. In an instant, cyber criminals could harm your finances, credit, and your reputation. Good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. Protect yourself with LifeLock, right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but you can keep what's yours with LifeLock by Norton. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com and use promo code Adam for 25% off. Ladies and gentlemen, the holidays are right around the corner. Before you know it, turkeys will be stuffed, and that fat guy with a white beard will be breaking into your homes in the middle of the night. Don't wait until the last minute to treat yourself or the people you love in life to marvelous Christmas presents like the Carolla Christmas Card Combo. This three-bottle gift set comes with a jolly Christmas card featuring and signed by each and every person that makes this the greatest podcart in the universe. So head to CorollaDrinks.com today. Get your Carolla Christmas Card Combo for only $60. That's three bottles of your choice, plus a Christmas card signed by the entire staff for only $60. Happy holidays from everyone at Carolla Drinks. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Ace Man, Bud and Charlotte, I've got a question for you. Would you rather have your greatness honored with a street named after you or a statue at your favorite venue? Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
I think as they were putting my statue up, an angry group of college students would surround it, chanting that it needed to come down. So I don't think my statue's going to last 10 minutes.
Yeah, it's not long for this world.
I'm going with the street.
Birds are
going
to crap on it.
Yeah. You go with the street because eventually they would change the name of the street, but people would always just remember
the old
name.
Right, exactly.
Right. Peter Stormare is here, the Grand Duke of Corsica is the name of the movie. It's available now on VOD and on demand as well. Good to see you, Peter.
Hey, how are you doing there, guys?
We're doing good. Where are you zooming where are you zooming in from?
Sunny Los Angeles. Where are you seated? I can't see the background.
Oh, we're in we're somewhere in Glendale, California. Hell, you should come in.
Yeah. Not too far away.
No. Yeah. And so we're looking at all your credits, and you're one of those guys where maybe you don't recognize the name immediately, but when you say Fargo and Armageddon and Minority Report and Lost World and all that kind of stuff, Big Lebowski, you're like, oh, that guy.
One of the great guys in film history.
Do you get a fair amount of that guy when you're walking around the Gelson's in Santa Monica?
Yeah, neighbor mistook me from working at Rite Aid. She said, oh, you're the pharmacist from Rite Aid. Can I ask you a question? I said, yeah. Do you think I should take this over the counter or should I go to the doctor? And I said, you do whatever you think is best. Okay, and she came back like a month later, crawling with a tail between her legs and saying, I'm so sorry. I mistook you for the pharmacist. You're that guy. I'm on the top 10 list of that guy.
You really are. I'm always curious with character actors like yourself. What do you get recognized most for, say, in public? Someone comes up to you, oh, I love you from so-and-so.
Depends what's on reruns. It's been a lot of Constantine lately. Constantine,
oh, wow.
the devil in Constantine. Yeah. I don't know why it's resurfaced after 10 years, but it's very popular and everybody's watching it. I might be on Netflix. So a lot of those old movies are coming up, but Armageddon is one of the main ones, I guess.
Well, speaking of the main movies, you know, something that we all think of course, is Fargo. And we were just talking about how you're one of the characters in a movie who's done so much with such few words that it leaves this lasting impression. I have to imagine that that was a great casting choice for them, but also a choice on your part.
Yeah, but my only idol I have in acting is Clint Eastwood. I grew up with a spaghetti western up in northern Sweden. And, you know, The Good, the Bad, and Ugly and the other movies he did with the Italian director was amazing. How much you can explain with just a look and just to lean back and don't push down into the viewer's throat. Because sometimes the audience wants to come with you on the journey. So keep your mouth shut and let them be with you.
Yeah.
I wish I could work with Clint, but I haven't had the pleasure so far. I met him once, and I was so I blushed like a little girl shaking his hand.
he's going to direct till he's 112, so you still have time.
Yeah, I still have time. I guess so. Yeah, he's phenomenal.
It is crazy. I'll tell you where it really kind of comes home to roost is. My dad is Clint Eastwood's age. And like,
oh, wow.
When I go and visit my dad, it's all he can do to kind of sit up in the chair and have a semi-coherent conversation about something that happened 70 years ago. And then you think about Clint Eastwood's like directing, starring. I don't know, is it just all genetics or is it some sort of inner
drive
that, you know, propels him?
He has an inner drive, the inner drive. Yeah, because the brain, you know, the endorphins from the brain feeds the body. And the beautiful thing about being an actor or a director or working with our profession is that you feel like you're 16 years old every time you start a project. And it's a lot of joy and you can ask stupid questions and you can do – it's a joy. To be doing the things we're doing. We are lucky people. And I think for him, it is like the brain is feeding his body with a lot of positive endorphin that just invigorates him to continue doing what he's doing. And his last movie is not the best script in the world, and he's getting older, but the way he's directing and his stars in it. And I admire him tremendously, while the other actors and directors are sort of just leaning back and enjoying some fame and fortune and, you know, traveling around the world giving speeches like a president. He at least, he works hard. But I think you can see when he's acting, it's a lot of joy. He's proud of doing what he's doing. And that's the beauty of our work. Or to be a musician like B.B. King, to sit and play until you're 91 and then you fall off the chair.
Kept him alive.
To work with art every day is not the same. You know, and I feel very fortunate that every day is so different from the previous day. And it's the joy to wake up. And to say, today is going to be a fantastic day. And a lot of people are doing very monotonous jobs, and it's sort of a lot of repetition, and you're doing the same thing all over again. But, you know, we are the lucky ones.
Well, I know you're kind of spiritual, and are you?
Aren't we all?
To lesser degrees.
Come on.
Well, I mean, I always kind of... I used to work very monotonous, repetitive jobs like you're talking about, and it's kind of hard to be happy when you're doing that. On the other hand, there's ways to make you happy doing repetitive stuff that seems very menial that way. And I don't know, I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Well, I've done monotonous jobs growing up, and even when I started my career over here living in New York, I worked, you know, construction, demolition. But I want to be the best, you know, on doing, you know, putting up a sheetrock. I became number one or with the demolition. I became the number one with a sledgehammer. I wanted to be the best one. I wanted to stick out. I wanted to be promoted. So for me, it was, or even driving a van with bread to different shops in New York. But I was number one. You know, I wanted to be the best.
You know what?
It is bread delivery in Brooklyn yeah. Heights. I wanted to be the best one.
You know,
and I succeeded.
You know, it's interesting. When you do come across, we never really think about this, but when you come across one of those people and you run across people doing jobs all day long because you're living in a society mm-hmm. surrounded by people that are doing jobs, and sometimes they're coming to your house and doing something. Sometimes you mm-hmm. encounter them in their store, workplace, airport, whatever. When you see someone who's doing what you consider a sort of thankless, kind of menial, kind of boring, like, mm-hmm. well, here's what you would end up doing if you never studied sure. in high school right. and you didn't go to college. This is what you would end up doing. And you see one of those people. You don't see them often, but you see them, and they're really into it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while, you'll get the guy drives the shuttle at the airport.
Yes, and I just had that guy.
67 years old, and you go, dude, you should be fucking miserable. And he's up on his feet, and he's helping
like,
people.
Terminal 6, Terminal 7, he's like, are coming up on so-and-so.
That guy's
making the announcements.
I guarantee that guy's happier than other people you think have really killer jobs right. who are always put upon and semi-miserable about what they're doing, even if it's yep. in an amazing environment.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those people are, I mean, even with when I'm home and I get the mail, which is like rare, maybe it's a dying form of handing out letters, but the mailman is here. I usually open the door, even in COVID, with a mask, saying thank you, awesome, I got the mail today, and it cheers him up or her, and we become friends. And I always give them a little gift for the holidays and stuff. Even people picking up the garbage, I make a little Christmas gift or Easter gift, and they appreciate it, and it makes them happy. You have to spread, even if you do monotonous jobs, you can be sharing with them, you know, that they're doing something that gives you some pleasure in life, too. I love to get mail. You only get emails these days, so even if I get, like, the crap, I open it up, and I read it, and I toss it.
A value pack.
Yeah. Penny saver.
Yeah. But it is, I mean, every people I work with, even on the set, I was brought up in theater. And in theater, where I grew up in Sweden, at the National Theater, which all European countries have, like a national theater or national ballet or opera. But at the theater, it was one thing going to the academy that people said, my teachers said, you have to learn the names of the people working down at the front desk and all the people doing, you know, the stage work behind you, those guys and girls working on stage hands. Learn their names as fast as you can. Address them with their name. Show them respect. Without them, you wouldn't be there in the limelight. So that's how I was brought up, you know. And if I hadn't been lucky just to walk away from my village, I would have been a mailman in my home village, I know. Mm. And I would appreciate that people came out and said, you know, thank you, Pete. That's great. I got some letters today, not just bills. So it's an attitude of life. I was born like a positive soul, and I can't wash it away. And it grows on me. And I see a lot of negative people. And I always try to tell them, you know, try to be positive. We need people carrying the torch of light. We don't need the naysayers.
I'm so glad you said that about the mailman. I have similar interactions. It was always very normal to me in my house. If you're at, you know, Subway or the deli counter, there is no, yeah, give me a, there, mm-hmm. we don't say, it's, hi, can I please have. The people that say, yeah, give me a freak
my parents
me
knew
out.
My mailman, you know, growing up, like gifts for holidays and Pete, yeah. Dave or Peter, one of those names, you know, they knew who he was growing up.
Oh, of course. Yeah. And I, well, you said coffee. I don't do coffee, but every Wednesday I go into Starbucks with, I am blessed with a young daughter 12, and on Wednesdays, she get picked up by the bus at the Starbucks, going to school. So every Wednesday, she can have a drink, you know, a coffee or an iced tea or whatever. And when I walk in, there is all these people that have pre-ordered things. And Jesus, I want to smack it. They walk in, they kick the line, they walk in and say, I'm Deborah, where's my stuff?
Grab and go.
You know, here's Deborah. The grab and go. And there's no courtesy. There's no tip. Maybe they tip on the phone, but there's no, like, the tip jar. They never go to the tip jar. And they always kick me around. They always kick people around and they grab and they go. Mm-hmm. They don't even say thank you. What a weird world. Hmm.
Did you grow up in a smaller village, you were saying?
Yeah, like 1,000 people. We didn't have a coffee shop.
What was it called? Did it have a good name?
Oh, no, you can't even pronounce it. It's called Arbro, like R and brother. Arbro.
Like a Arbro. Like a pirate from the valley.
Yeah, Arbro.
A lot of umlauts.
Nordic name.
Did you always know you wanted to act? Did it seem like a low percentage career from Arbro?
Yeah, because, you know, you couldn't say that you were interested in poetry and ballet and opera or something. You know, I grew up with Jimi Hendrix, and I was torn because I wanted to write poetry and sit in my closet and just dream about outer space. But it was hard to be, you know, not in the box growing up in a small village and growing up in Sweden. Overall, you have to be in a box. You have to be like everybody else. Otherwise, you know, they roll you in tar and feathers. So I had a hard time, but luckily I knew by the age of 5, 6 that I would live in California and work with movies. And I told my parents, and that dream or premonition was driving me to keep it to my heart and not tell anybody. And one day I just left the village and I was in Stockholm. And one day I was in an academy of acting, and people said, well, where the fuck is Peter? Sorry for my Norwegian there. where the hell is Peter? Yeah, where the hell is Peter? Well, I guess he's working at the National Theater now. How the hell is that possible? That idiot working there. And then I worked, you know, like with Ingmar Bergman as my mentor and teacher. I worked as a director and actor. And then all of a sudden, after 10 years with Bergman, and I had offers from here, I had been out here performing his productions. I had an agent. And all of a sudden, I just disappeared from the National Theater, too. It took him half a year to locate me, and I was on stage in New York. And I said, bye-bye. So I've always been driven by my premonition I had as a young guy that I would end up in the U.S. I would live here, and I would live in California, close to Disneyland, and work with movies.
Do you still – I always ask this. And the answer is always the same, and it always upsets me. But at this stage in your career, with all these varied parts you've played, do you have to go in and audition at this stage?
No, not really.
Oh, good.
If I have to, I tell them to go and Norwegian themselves.
Go watch Fargo, you son of a bitch.
Yeah. No, because if you don't know. And these days, you know, all the casting, it's different today. A couple of years later with the internet, it's like 21, 22-year-old sending out spam mail. Mm. Hey, we want you for this part. You got to be 20 to 21 to 25. And I say, why the hell do I get this email? Why do we get this email? You know, because I fired my agents and everything. So I just go with a lawyer. And so it's bizarre these days. You know, you don't get casted from who you are, really. It's a lot of spam letters getting out. But if no one wants to cast me, I have other things to do. I'm a good writer, and I go over to my old home country sometimes. I do some projects over there, and I have a car. I hate jewelry on my hands, and I never buy clothes. I never, cut my hair. They do it when you do a movie. I never cut my beard unless I'm in a movie, they cut it. So I have not really a lot of expenses. I come from a very simple background, and I don't collect cars. I don't want to live in a big fancy house.
Oh boy! Just when you and Peter were at a blossoming romance.
Simpatica.
Wrap this up. The name of the movie.
The Grand Duke of Corsica. You have to see it, and it's a weird kind of coincidence. It's a movie about, what should I say, two people clashing, one who is a great architect, and I'm Timothy Spall, fantastic English actor, and me doing the Grand Duke of Corsica, living in a dream. He's like a Munchausen. You don't know if he's lying about his life or if it's real, but these two guys become very, very close because the one learns from the other, and together they become companions. But it all ends with a pandemic, and we did this in 2019, October, November.
Oh,
wow!
And then I went up to American Gods in Toronto, a television series for Starz, and I was up there, and I barely made it home, and was closed.
Oh yeah, you couldn't get out of Canada. Brian, do you have a question? No,
I did have a question. I watched the new movie. I liked it very much. Of course, I love all your performances. And I was thinking about something you just said, which was you didn't want to be put in that box way back in the day in Sweden, when ironically, I feel like audiences think of you in a box a little bit, where you're eccentric and you play crazy characters. And how does that affect the roles you go after or envision or play these days, where you play eccentric and crazy very well? Even in this movie, you're the titular Grand Duke.
Because I'm a very boring, like a normal person, I love to work with wood. I love to do things on the house. I'm a regular guy grown up in a little village in the middle of the forest where it has a lot of snow all the time. It's covered by snow at this moment. So for me, I want to do these guys that I would never be as a private person. And I think if you line up 100 male actors, all of them wants to do. I met Harrison Ford some years ago, and he said to me that he could never do those bad guys. He tried once and it became a flop. He said, I envy you that can do all these crazy characters that are so far out there, because I can't do them.
That's funny.
They don't allow me to do them. Yes. So it's, if you're a normal human being, then you want to do crazy stuff in front of a camera or on a stage, because it's rewarding for to use your fantasy and to use all the elements you can try to incorporate in a character. Because in life, I'm a simple guy. I'm a regular guy that I would love to be completely not so crazy, but I call myself a village idiot in a way, because the village idiot knows something that the rest of the village doesn't know. The village fool is always smiling, standing outside the grocery shop, or some shop, the hardware store. He stands outside the hardware store with a smile, and everybody asks him, "Why are you smiling?" And he just shakes his head. Oh, you don't know. That's me. Because, he knows something the rest of the village can't get a grip on, and he's happy.
I think if you label yourself the village idiot, you're fine. It's when the village attempts, in my case, to label me the village idiot, That's when there's a problem.
Yeah, it always complimentary.
Always made me laugh in Woody Allen's Love and Death when they had a convention for Village Idiots. And he was driving. He was driving his Village Idiot to the convention for other Village Idiots, and it had a big banner just said "Welcome Idiots" in front of like they would go to Vegas and have all the guys who are in the heating and air business all show up in Vegas.
Welcome HVAC professionals.
Can you find that, Chris? In Love and Death, the convention for Village Idiots always made me laugh. I love
because
that.
Because if my home village, if they started calling me the village, you know, the idiot, some do, I just lean back and say, well, look at yourself and the life you're leading. Is it rewarding? Are you happy?
What kind of woodworking do you do, by the way?
I do a lot of carpentry, but also I do a lot of, I find old pieces of wood. I just went to my storage that I pay $300 a month for like old lumber. And I want to just throw it out because I don't have time anymore. But I take sometimes and I make icons, and it can be a Elvis Presley or Lennon or Paul Strummer. Or David Bowie, you know, and you have a candle there, and I work on it, and I work with a lot of, I burn it, and it looks really aging. And it says, is that a Madonna? No, it's Elvis Presley. But people like it, and I give it away. And then somebody said, you should do these and sell them. And you can't really because it's copyrighted. So I do them one-on-one, I give them away. I don't need to make it a living. But I like to work with wood and to take – I had an old peach tree that my father planted, and he, you know, passed away too early. But we had to take the peach tree down, and now I have a big peach tree with a trunk that is pretty big. And I've been working for at least, you know, for on a 6 feet trunk that is – yeah, the diameter is – I don't know, but maybe 10 inches. I've been trying for 2 years now to get the bark off. I have it out. I wash it down.
Wow.
I have it out the sun. Yeah, and it's hard to get the bark off a peach tree. But I'm working on it. Every time I'm home, I'm chopping some bark away. But you can't go too hard because then you destroy the wood. It's got to look like the bark, you know, went by itself, evaporated.
We have the...
It's nothing I can sell, but for me, it's just beautiful to see the wood, how it looks beneath the bark, and I can touch it, I can smell it and feel it, and it's life.
We got the Village Idiot clip, by the way, Chris is cute. We can take a look at that from, 1969, Love and Death? 68? Huh?
75.
Yeah. Oh, 75, is that late? All right. A very funny, a joke for joke, strongest Woody Allen movie. Not the crimes and misdemeanors and all that stuff. That's all thought provoking with jokes. This is just jokes.
Several days later, we set out for Moscow. We took Berdyakov with us part way. He was on his way to Minsk. There was a Village Idiots convention in Minsk, and Berdyakov was planning to attend. Village idiots from all over Russia were meeting there.
Stupid.
Playing with a yo-yo.
Trying to get the stick on the ball and walking in a circle. It's a fucking funny joke. There's a convention for Village.
That's my home village. It looks like the people in my home village.
Is that what? How old is your home village?
Oh, boy. It's like from the 13th century.
Oh, wow.
Or from the Viking age. I come from the last stronghold in Sweden where the Vikings were still holding up until the beginning of the 16th century. Then they were killed off and incorporated with Sweden as a kingdom.
I have a interesting thought, possibly, but I'm from the San Fernando Valley. So for us, we go, oh, what's old? And you go, well, that strip mall was built in the late 60s, so that's pretty old. But if you want to go to Pasadena, they have Craftsman houses there that were built in 1919.
Yeah, 100 years old.
That's old.
Yeah.
And then it struck me when I was playing a college, and me and Dr. Drew were driving through, you know, some place in the East Coast, some place in Massachusetts or something. And the guy like said, "Ah, those are newer houses. Those were built in 1780 sure, or right. something." And I was like, "New? Nothing in the San Fernando Valley predates 1967.
No, it's all orange groves."
So. But what is it like growing up in a place where generations, like, I don't know, does it give you some thought, some insights, some something where this thing has been here for 800 years?
Yeah, because you grew up with a lot of older people around you, and you still do. And the traditions are being told down verbally to younger generations. And we're believers in trolls and gnomes and, you know, strange things living in the forest. And you have to be very careful before you go into forest talk, address the forest, address things, you know, like a house that hasn't been occupied for a while. If you go in there, you have to talk to the little ones, and it's like traditions that the old people are telling the younger. And that is something we don't have here. And I agree. I came here and starting to work on my house here in West Hollywood. And they say you can't touch anything. Why? Because it's a historic building. Well, it was built in 1926.
Exactly.
When I lived in Stockholm, it was built in the 14th century. In my apartment building, and they said, "Well, everything here before 1934 is historic." Okay, so it's yeah, but that's the beauty of this country too. You know, we think highly of Europe, but me being European from the beginning, I'm so proud to be an American. Even if all this craziness is going on, I can only see, you know, as a village idiot or a fool, I only see a bright future for this country and the world. And I'm obliged sort of to think that way. I don't want to be a negative guy who just shrugs everything off and being seeing just darkness. I see light and beauty in the future. And the same thing, you know, I can talk to you three now sitting there in a studio. I'm sitting here in my house. I just came back from a job. I've been home for, you know, 24 hours. And no one is really thinking about that we four people can communicate as a reason, because generations before us has endured famines, wars, pandemics after pandemics. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. And sometimes when I meet younger people, I say, "You complain about this? You should have been at the First World War with the Spanish flu. Then you could complain. Mm-hmm. Or you should have been, you know, with the Black Death and all that." And I'm here because my ancestors went through all that terror and hardship. And the same with your ancestors. That's why we can talk. And I think we don't think back enough. If you think back, you can also start looking into the future and be empowered by your ancestors that walked miles after miles after miles, and they've been like, they cut their heads off, but the survivor walked away to find some new territory to live in and build a family maybe and continue. And yeah, I'm getting into the deep sea here, but
we like it.
I just think during this pandemic, people are complaining. People want to go on vacation right away. And can't you just give it a little break for a little while? Because it's going to be okay. But sometimes we have to just stop and breathe and take it easy. I know economically for some people it's hard. It's easier for others. But if we think about our grandmothers, grandfathers, and going back generations, what they endured so I could be here today, and that I pay a homage every day to my ancestors, because there's so many that never made it to this place because of atrocities that happen in this world.
Well, going back to your ancestors, it strikes me we have to change the name of a lot of our sports teams, you know, because they were called Indians or Braves or Redskins or or something. A lot of people replace it. Sometimes it'll get replaced with Viking. We have the Vikings. There's a lot of Viking talk. It's not on anyone's radar, Vikings. You know what I mean?
Oh, it's been on the radar.
It has?
They don't want the name Vikings.
Oh, really?
Are they going after the Minnesota Vikings?
Yeah.
Oh, they are.
Because Viking stands for pillaging, you know, and you know, killings and all the atrocities. It doesn't stand for some power, you know, like fighter. You know, the Minnesota Fighters, maybe. But some people, it's true, because I've been shooting up in Minnesota in two seasons. And there's some people up there debate that doesn't want to have the name of the Vikings.
Oh, really?
Most of the...
But that's for the opposite reason, not like you're appropriating our culture. It's Vikings are not a word we want to be associated with. They were bad. They're not warriors in our mind.
Right. No. And they didn't, you know, but they sailed all the way down to Northern Africa, and they went to the Holy Land, and they went all the way down into the big lakes of the USA. They went all the way, you know, to halfway to India. They came close to India, but the Himalaya and stopped them. So they did all this traveling, and that's something amazing. And they took entire France and England for 200 years.
Well, growing up in the village, where there were a lot of guys wearing Fran Tarkington jerseys, like in junior high? I mean, were you guys into the Vikings?
Of course. You,
it's the whole
you learned a route. Because you were, because you're surrounded with graves, you know, like the mold. And the mounds and the Viking, you know, like coins and people finding coins and stuff. And it was, that was the route going through my home village out to the Baltic Sea and then over to Russia. And from my home village, they continue over to Norway, to Bergen. So that was a trade sort of track they took. So it's a route they took. So we were brought up being proud of the Viking, you know, Viking, not that they went into a monastery and killed a lot of monks and took all the gold, and then the Pope said, you're allowed to conquer anything else, not but no monasteries and churches. But you're allowed to kill people and take Paris if you want.
Reasonable.
That's reasonable, but don't kill any of my people, you know. So
well, and there's a fun fact, Adam. You have Dupendrins, right?
Yes, my hands.
So there's a very good chance you have Viking heritage because they call it the Viking disease because it came out of a lot of Viking people. So we could be talking about you.
Yeah.
I wonder what kind of last name Tarkington is.
I don't know.
Sounds like it could be some Viking heritage there.
Yeah, that's very Nordic. You got a
Fran Tarkington? No wonder he was a Viking.
Have you done your DNA? Have you done your DNA tracing?
No, I'm scared everyone's going to find out we own slaves or something. I'm worried. And also, I'm worried that people are going to hit me up for money, you know what I mean? But like, I find out I have a cousin on the East Coast, and he's not doing so good right now.
Oh, it happened to, it happened to a couple of my friends. Their father had some kids on the side.
Yeah, look, less history, more mystery. That's how I approach every relationship. There's nothing good that can come of this. All right, let me
We have to learn from history, though. We have to learn from history.
Or we can ignore it and keep walking. That's what I do. Just put your head down, walk with purpose.
Mind your business.
I'm good. All right, Peter, hang on for a second. Let me just... find out, tell you about Tommy John. This Black Friday, celebrate softness season by stocking up on Tommy John underwear, loungewear, and pajamas. Shop their Black Friday sale right now. Give the gift of comfort to everyone on your list, including yourself. I'm wearing my Tommy Johns right now. Over 16 million pairs sold. Giving the gift of Tommy John has to become a holiday tradition for families across the country. Stuff's so good. Now it's getting colder outside. Everyone's putting on loungewear. Beautiful Tommy John. They don't have customers. They have fanatics. This holiday, make your family even more comfortable with the gift of Tommy John loungewear, underwear, and bras. Best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free. Guaranteed. Right, Dawson?
During Tommy John's Black Friday sale, get 20% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Adam. Get 20% off for a limited time only at TommyJohn.com/Adam. Go right now to TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details.
All right, Peter, can you hang out with us and we'll do some news?
Yeah. I'm wearing the lingerie right now.
Oh, perfect.
Nice. Tommy John. All right, quick break. We'll be back, and we'll do the news right after this. Hey, Geico, do you own... do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gino Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
Speaking of football players, starting off with a pretty horrific story because it is making the rounds today. A former NFL running back is accused of domestic violence after a video was shared showing him brutally attacking his ex-girlfriend at their Florida home. 30-year-old Zach Stacy, who played three seasons in the NFL with the Rams and Jets. Yeah, he's on camera. And I mean, I have the footage. It's pretty brutal.
I stumbled upon it. I wish I hadn't seen it.
Literally throws her like a ragdoll into a TV and then just beats the shit out of her.
There's a couple things. First off, there's a part in it where he's like, at some point, she's completely vanquished. She's just on the ground. She's in a fetal position. I was literally talking with someone today about this kind of like crazy violence. And at some point, they knock out the store owner or whoever it is. And at some point, they're on the street just laying there as a rag doll.
Right.
And then someone comes up and kicks them.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is the scariest person on the planet. I can wrap my mind around a lot of forms of violence. I don't condone it, but I kind of, all right, this guy did that.
You get the genesis of it.
Right. When the person's just laying there lifeless and you kick that person.
Yeah, looming over her.
And so, he's beating the crap out of her. And like at some point he walks away.
Yeah.
And then he like stops and he's like,
Yeah.
And that's the part where you collect yourself where the person is laying.
Oh, shit, what have I done?
And you're a professional athlete, and then you go back and do it again. To me, those are the scariest people on the planet.
Totally agree.
Embezzlers, or as I've always said, the people that like poison their rich old husband to try to collect insurance or something, that's between them and their God. These people are the scariest to me.
Well, the woman called the police, but Stacy had left and was nowhere to be found. And by the way, this all happened in front of their 5-month-old son. She was taken to the hospital, treated for bumps and bruises. Earlier this week, she filed for a restraining order. This is the thing about restraining orders. Like, crazy people don't care about paper.
That's right.
Like, how does that work? Like, you just want to have it on record so when things escalate and they kill you, there's a paper trail? Like, it's just so hard for me to understand.
I always want to, like, sit down with his mother and view the video and go, what the fuck happened here? How did you create this thing that does this?
But what are the odds that he's going to go to court and they're going to go, Your Honor, CTE?
Oh, probably.
But how many how many athletes don't beat the shit out of their loved ones and have been concussed?
40%, 50%.
Good.
I don't know. In the football, it's in the mid-40s, I think. Now, if you're talking about place kickers and long snappers, right. Probably the lower most of that group. Yeah, but now this is my fantasy. My fantasy is that him and John Gruden are just end up on the same park bench, you know? And they're like, I can never go back to the NFL ever again.
You can never go back to the NFL again. I had a long career. I had a 10-year contract.
What'd you do?
Some emails came out.
I beat the shit out of this chick and was all caught on video. It was brutal and violent.
Did you email the video to yourself when the NFL found it?
No, there's no emails. I physically put my hands on her and beat the shit out of this woman.
But what did you email?
In front of our kid, by the way.
Someone in celebration and brag
emails.
About?
Emails. You can't get thrown out for email. You got to put your hands on somebody.
That's how it would go.
We're all in the same place, right?
That's right. We all ended up here. I guess we all did the same thing.
Yeah, this is, I mean, this seems like an open and shut case, I hope.
Not a good look. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Baldwin news, a little bit of Baldwin news. He's been hit with another lawsuit. We knew this was coming over this horrible accidental shooting on the set of Rust. This time, the movie's script supervisor, Mamie Mitchell, has filed the suit, claiming the screenplay never called for him to fire a shot that killed the cinematographer, Helena Hutchins. According to the lawsuit, Mitchell was standing 4 feet away when Baldwin fired the Colt 45 and suffered injuries herself. Her lawyer, Gloria Allred, said Mitchell has not worked since the shooting, and this has ruined her 40-year career. The lawsuit says that Baldwin should not have depended on anyone else's word for whether the gun was loaded. The key gaffer
on
the movie,
Why do you have the person on the set to do that thing?
Two people. Serge Svetnoy also has sued over emotional distress.
It's basically like saying you should have went up to the cockpit and made sure that the flight controls work before you put your kid on the plane.
You shouldn't have relied on anyone else to land that plane.
Someone hands you something. But the part that's kind of interesting, and Peter, I don't know if you've worked with Alec Baldwin before or no.
No, I haven't worked. I met him a couple of times, and but the funny thing in this, I've been doing this for 35 years, and I've done a lot of guns. And this happened during a rehearsal. I mean, it is very, very odd. It is very odd, and I don't know what happened to Alec Baldwin. He's a nice guy. I don't think he did this on purpose. But when you're on set, when you rehearse, this was a rehearsal. You never have a gun. You use your fingers. You use your fingers like a gun. Sometimes the cinematographer wants, you know, something metal so she can see how the light will fall and stuff. But during a rehearsal, you never bring a gun on set. And if you bring a gun, you always check it. You always have someone saying, okay, gun on set, hot gun on set, or a cold gun on set. Let's check it, you know. And you have people, gaffers, electricians, even prop people or from catering. Anybody can step in and say, I want to check the gun. I was down in Missouri and they aimed a shotgun at me. And of course, I checked the gun and the electrician checked the gun with so many people checking the gun. And then, you know, you aim it and you click and nothing happened. You know, it's going to be, they're going to add the flame and everything afterwards. But when you aim a gun, you don't aim it at the person. That's a golden rule. You don't aim it at the person because there's a cut where you see they aim the shotgun at me, you shoot them, and then, you know, everybody's safe. And then they turn the camera and they aim it at me, and I have some blood on my chest. And I said, oh, so you never aim. So I don't understand how this gun could even be there and he's pulling a trigger. I don't understand.
Well, the story, which is for me, you know, these things kind of, you peel them like an onion first to hear. There's an accidental shooting. The gun was loaded and you think, okay, they were filming. And they squeeze the trigger, and we've heard it before with The Crow.
Sure, right.
And that shit happens. Then you go, it was during rehearsal. And then you're like, well, why were you squeezing the trigger during rehearsal? Yeah. But there's a new-ish article as part of what you're talking about, I think, where it wasn't in the script to squeeze the trigger.
That's what she's saying.
So if it wasn't in the script, and by the way, that's probably easily discernible.
Right.
You just find the scene.
And it isn't.
Now, I don't totally believe this yet.
I was going to say, it doesn't add up, because why would you even bother loading a blank or a whatever into the prop weapon or the real weapon if it was not meant to be fired?
I don't know. They seem so helter-skelter over there, it's unclear whether they know there was a blank in it or not.
You're right, play helter-skelter. It was an independent movie, so they could have been, a shot could have been thought up, then by the DP or the director.
That's true, but if it is now...
The script doesn't always mean what, it's in the script. Well, the director wants to do it.
Yeah, and we can figure that out. But if it's a case of now you're rehearsing, number one, you didn't need to cock the hammer back and squeeze the trigger. But if it turns out it wasn't in the script, then he was just killing time, pardon the pun. Mm. I mean, or just kind of fucking around or just, doing what sort of humans might do sometimes. You're screwing around or whatever. Then it goes into a different stratosphere.
Well, now we're back to the actor Alec Baldwin as opposed to the EP Alec Baldwin.
Right. So I don't know who said – there's an article that was sent to me.
The story will come out, and I'm sure anything's possible. It seems highly unlikely to me that it was never – why would it be loaded if it was never meant to be shot on camera? That's
insane. I don't know that it was intentionally loaded.
We know he was supposed to be pointing it at the camera.
Oh, you're saying that it could whoever loaded it could have just gone rogue.
Instead, it shouldn't have –
or
that it
not
couldn't have
loaded
even,
it. Like, they didn't seem to – they used this gun to shoot out, allegedly, they were doing target practice.
It shouldn't even have blank.
It seemed like the whole thing was sort of chaos. So I don't know that they intentionally said, I'm putting a blank in, but I screwed up and I put a live round in. I don't even know if it's that. They
could have
just went, I need a gun.
Okay.
And he went,
I mean, it's a $7 million movie. It's not an independent. They try to, the lawyers are now trying to say this was a bad movie running with a lot of non-union people, a lot of idiots. I worked out there in New Mexico numerous times. I've been shooting with these peacemakers numerous times. But when it comes to action, when you actually do the scene and you're going to shoot towards the camera, you never shoot at the camera. You shoot on the side of the camera. And when you do shoot, there's no one on that side of the camera. Everybody has moved to the other side of the camera looking at monitors. But this was a dolly, so it had to move a little. So they were all placed. The operator was there, and she was standing behind with the monitor and the director, and they were moving. And when it's a rehearsal, you don't even have a gun. If you have a gun, you keep your two fingers outside. You never squeeze the trigger, and you never point the gun at a person. That is the big mystery to me. And I don't point a finger to Alex. They could have been joking around, and by some tragic accident, it just went off, because those guns are very trigger happy, because you just have to just squeeze a little, and they go off. But I can't even imagine being on so many movies. They've never given me a gun when you rehearse. You can't. Mm. You get a rubber gun, and sometimes you can get a metal gun, looking like a real, because if they really have to measure how far away and how the light is falling and stuff like that. But it's a rehearsal. And then you point the gun, you can point it like 2-5 feet away from people sitting on a dolly. Or you can point it into the ground. You don't have to point at people, because that's a golden rule. When you're on set, you never point, even with a rubber gun, don't point it at a person.
Yeah.
Well, somebody should tell the prosecutor.
From the Rittenhouse case. Yeah. He got that AR-15. He had his finger inside of by the way, I don't know why you would put your finger in. Yeah. He was pointing it
at the jury box.
At the jury box.
Bugs Bunny shit.
Yeah.
I get it. The clip wasn't in it, but it's still weird to put your finger in
bad form
and point it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris has this.
So what?
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
The script supervisor is rep by Gloria Allred. So, and we have her statement
Yeah.
Which is what, Chris?
Alec Baldwin intentionally, without just cause or excuse, cocked and fired the loaded gun even though the upcoming scene to be filmed did not call for the cocking and firing of the firearm. Mr. Baldwin chose to play Russian roulette with a loaded gun without checking it and without having the armorer do so. He should have assumed that the gun in question was loaded unless and until it was demonstrated to him or checked by him that it was not loaded. He had no right to rely upon some alleged statement by the assistant director.
Alleged!
That it was, quote, a cold gun. The damages seeking – oh, sorry. Mr. Baldwin cannot hide behind the assistant director to attempt to excuse the fact that he did not check the gun himself.
Mm. Well, it's almost like two different arguments. To me, it's – if the scene didn't call for the cocking and the firing of the gun, that's the focus to me. Sure, why did you do that? The part where the guy's incompetent handed you the gun, that's more on him than it is on Baldwin. But wow.
Let's see what happens.
Sorry.
We have.
Yeah, it's a big mystery to me. It's like I can't even imagine, you know. But it's also. I got my nose broken four times and twice by some famous people. But the thing is that the person who really broke my nose very badly, like it was like a quarter to three, my nose, but lawyers are moving in and they say, you know, we're going to sue this guy. And they're just waiting for this guy, the actor, to call in to me and say and get on tape, I'm sorry that I did this. But they don't do because they have lawyers saying, don't even confess that you did this.
Was this on set or was this with his lady friend?
No, it's on set. It's on set, like me working on set and having a scene. And, you know, they go into wild and coming with the elbow. Suppose you can be 2 feet away and it looks real because you shoot it
right
in a way. But you know, one actor got like so close. So he broke my nose really bad.
Who was it?
But no, I can't name him. I'm sorry.
Gag order.
He initials JC. You can
Jesus
figure
Christ.
It out.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Got it right.
But you know, if he had called to me and said, I'm sorry for breaking your nose. I'm so sorry. That was a, you know, mistake from my side. That is for me. Then I can go to a lawyer and say, okay, we can sue this guy for $1 million because for my nose and the treatment and the surgery and everything. And damaging, and I couldn't work for a couple of weeks and months, you know. But there's a thing, if I had done it, a lawyer had come to me and say, don't call, don't say that you did it. Don't confess to anything. Let it just be silent.
It's the same thing with car accidents. They tell you never go, oh, my bad, I'm sorry, are you okay?
Yeah,
supposed to say that for that reason.
Yeah.
James Cromwell.
He's like 90.
Well, but the man's, you always have a puncher's chance.
Yeah.
I'm sticking with Jesus.
He's lanky.
Anchor and Hines. We made $13 billion. We're fighting for you. But it's a big enigma. I'm sorry for Alec. I mean, it's something that just happened. I took my father out when he was still alive, shooting with actually the armorer's father, Fell. That is, he's one of the legendary armorers in Hollywood. He's like a cowboy. He's an expert on all these old revolvers. And he told my father to keep your two hands outside the trigger, you know, on the thing going around, so you're not inside. Keep it like this. Okay, my father said. And my father walked with the gun like two steps. And just by him being nervous, a shot went off like 5 inches from his foot.
Oh, my God.
And so if there's a live round in there, I don't think Alec Baldwin knew about it. And I think it could have just been a tremor in his hand or he did something that it went off accidentally. He might not even have been pointing at them. Maybe the gun, he was putting it down and it went off. Well, we don't know the story. I don't think he's just pointing, because it's a rule that everybody knows that works.
You're saying Baldwin has been on enough sets and had enough gunplay, action movie, whatever, that anyone like yourself or Baldwin who's been around for a while and been on enough of these sets, it's just ingrained in them not to do this.
Right.
Yeah, you check it yourself. I mean, with the revolver, I take out the magazine, I roll it around, I check the pot, you know, the barrel, everything. I have somebody else to check it. You try to shoot it down. And even if there's old revolvers, they say, don't shoot too many times. Don't, you know, because the hammer gets ruined, you know. But I still do it. There's nothing. Six times, nothing happens. Then I have it. But I never point it at a person. Yeah. But if it's a live round, just a tremor like my father did, he didn't squeeze the trigger. He just, you know, he shook it. And they are so trigger happy, those old guns.
Well, I have this quote from the New York Post where they said a few moments earlier, Baldwin had been preparing for a shootout scene inside this church, making sure the camera crew got its angles right. And then they're quoting him supposedly by saying, so I guess I'm going to take this out, pull it and go bang. He said as he gripped the holstered handgun, which was supposed to be loaded with dummy rounds, according to the report.
It was.
Right. So.
But then the script says as opposed no to firing nothing. The gun.
Right. Right.
Seems weird.
Yeah. Very,
you don't
very
have dummies. You don't have dummies in when you do a rehearsal. You don't even have a gun. I don't know what they were doing.
Also, I will say this. I don't know if this makes sense, but in one of those old Colt revolvers, if you don't have something in the barrel or something in the chamber, you'll just see daylight going through it. If you're holding it and you're seeing daylight pass through it, it's not going to look right on camera. Maybe there's something to that.
I think he just was going to put it down in the holster or just taking it off from the holster and it just went off. I don't think he even aimed it, because you don't aim it at anybody.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what else we got, Gina Grant?
Well, we have an update from, I think it was yesterday's story about the woman who threw the giant cup of soup in the cashier's face, the manager.
It looked like navy bean to me.
I'm thinking more of a chicken tortilla, because this was a Mexican restaurant. We know now.
I'd say I saw beans in it, I felt. Anyway, I disagree
could've
with throwing
chicken.
Food.
Okay. Well, the New York Post again reports that 31-year-old Amanda Martinez was arrested Wednesday morning and charged with assault after that attack at Sol de Jalisco Mexican restaurant in Texas. Police said Martinez picked up the order. We talked about this. At the restaurant, came back, said it was so hot, the plastic cover of the container was melting.
Can I say this about too hot as part of your complaint? Soup, coffee, eggs, whatever. This is too hot. All right, well, hang out for 26 seconds.
Yeah, blow on it.
And but it'll get down to a temperature you'll enjoy.
Yeah.
I mean, like, take that soup, just stir it for 30 seconds.
Off.
I mean, we all know the direction it's going. It's not getting hotter.
It's going to find its stasis.
It's coming down.
Yeah.
It's a little hot for you now, but I bet you go wash your hands in the ladies' room and come back. It's going to be perfect soup temperature.
Right.
So it's a weird complaint.
Yeah.
Like, by the time you wait in line and walk back to the counter, it's now at a decent temperature.
Time to complain.
This is clearly a woman who had an axe to grind when she woke up that morning, because the manager offered her a refund, or would you like something else off the menu? And her response was, how about a jug of hot soup to your face?
How about she gets together with that ex-NFLer?
Oh, yeah.
Or sort of hair-triggered battle royale.
She's lighter and she's not athlete. So she gets the soup.
Yeah, she's sitting around with a can of Dinty Moore.
Right.
He's balling up his fist. We see who the...
Yeah.
Only one man can leave that apartment.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, not only is she in jail, but she is banned from that restaurant.
Oh.
She will not be invited back anytime soon.
But she's going to sue him because it was too hot. So she did that unintentionally.
Well, and
she didn't know...
Right.
Yeah.
And the worst thing you can do when you're trying to prove that your soup is too hot is pour it and throw it in someone's face who's like, I'm okay.
Yeah, not that bad.
I don't need a skin graft.
I'm not a huge fan of Big Brother, but whether it's the NFL case we're talking about or the soup case, imagine the soup case not with no film. You know what I mean? It's like, no, I was kindly asking her to cool the soup down.
Might
and I was reaching for my phone, and my elbow hit the thing, and
inadvertently
it hit the counter and it splattered.
I guess a couple drops got on her.
She's lying. She didn't. She's got a beef with me. She's jealous of me because I can afford soup, and she has to work at a place that dispenses soup.
She's got beef barley with me.
I was holding the cup. I was looking at my watch, and some of it beef farts.
Stupid. Just keep going.
Keep going.
Some of it may have spilled on her face, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Like, imagine everyone's fucked up version minus all the video. Nanny cams, right?
Yeah.
The NFL guy would have been, she lunged at me. She was holding something sharp.
She tripped.
I tried to defend myself.
In a dream world, there's no way to do this, but you should say, all right, I'll hear your story out. Tell me your story, but we will find out whether or not there's video at the end of your story.
Mm. Right.
And see how everyone's...
Right.
Who was filming the NFL guy? The guy up there, the ex-Jet guy.
It looks like it looks like a nanny cam, like a closed circuit in the home.
It sort of looked to me like she maybe thought this may be coming.
Well, because there were two different angles.
Yeah, and she sort of
cutaways.
She seemed like she thought
two different scenes.
He was capable of this.
Well, then good for her.
Wanted to chronicle it.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Do we have time? Okay, yeah. So don't get angry. I know this is your least favorite subject, but there is more evidence.
Britney Spears.
No!
Oh.
Your other favorite.
Hmm.
There is more evidence of a budding relationship between Kim Kardashian and Pete Davidson.
Pete Davidson.
I can prove it. We have camera. We have footage.
The thing about Pete, you know, okay, he's not ruggedly handsome, but he's also not funny. Wait a minute. Now I'm mad again.
Well, there is a lot of birthday footage posted by Flavor Flav, because why not, of a little birthday bash they had for him at Kris Jenner's house. Check this picture out. This isn't something you see every day. I mean, I guess it is these days.
Flavor Flav was
This is on his Instagram account. So just so we're keeping track of what's going on here, it's Pete Davidson, Kim Kardashian, her mother, all in matching pajamas, and then Flavor Flav just kind of there. And go to the next picture, because he is so taken with Pete Davidson, who I believe at some point calls his adopted son, that he lets him wear one of his clocks, which apparently is
a really big
deal. So this was like a little gathering. He posted it all over Instagram. Pete turned 28. And again, family and Pete all in matching pajamas.
Oh. Now, I don't know. Do the Kardashians, is everything planned? Do they hitch their wagon to what they think may be a youthful, up-and-coming something to inject some sort of blood, young blood into their veins? You know, she turns 40 and things start to sunset a little. Do you look around? Like,
he's
who's a young up-and-comer?
Where do you go from Kanye? I mean, stud-wise. I mean, like, you know, cultural relevancy-wise. You got to stay.
Yeah.
You're a reality star. You don't have anything else. You just stay in the public eye.
Yeah.
Yes.
Although I will give the devil her due, because there's another story. I'll get it. I don't have it in front of me. But she used her money and her money from Skims, her undergarment line, to get like a plane full of female soccer players like out of harm's way. And I want to say Afghanistan. I have to look. But, you know, she dives in sometime with some serious philanthropy, with her Innocence Project and prison reform. It is it is impressive compared to so many who do nothing with
that
money.
Look, as previously discussed on the show multiple times, I can make fun of Kim Kardashian as much as I want. But my mom has done jack squat for humanity, including paying just a tax base.
Just the one time.
She's just she's not a maker. She's a taker. Sure, you know what I mean? And just the Kardashians, just what they've generated in terms of revenue, tax revenue, jobs, everything else, tip of the cap.
Yeah.
Like she's not my prop. She's not on the problem side of the ledger for me.
Remember when they had that Kardashian credit card with a comedy K, and the APR was like 47%. Didn't last long.
No.
Sounds like something Trump would do.
Yeah, it was great. Mike Tyson's former bodyguard is telling us a little inside scoop about the boxer. He claims that Mike Tyson would have to have sex before boxing matches because if he didn't, he was afraid he would kill the person he was in the ring with.
Mm. Think how great he would have been.
Rudy Gonzalez, he was the bodyguard. He served as Tyson's chauffeur and bodyguard during the 80s. He made the claim during this interview with The Sun, saying that Tyson would, quote, bang the shit out of some random woman just before entering the ring. He says he had girls tucked away in the bathrooms and in dressing rooms, changing rooms for this reason, and that Tyson would, quote, bang the shit out of them, snap his neck, and say, okay, this guy's going to live tonight.
Wow.
Peter has the same thing when he goes on set.
Yeah. I think with the Kardashians and all this, it's scripted. Everything is scripted, you know? If she... saving a soccer team, someone comes up with a great idea. You know, I'm getting a little bit bored of all these famous people doing things. And Mike Tyson, I think, highly of, because some documentaries with him has been really interesting. And I think he did an amazing career. And
his one-man show was incredible on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, now... I don't know how much he got paid now, this bodyguard, and I'm grateful that he didn't say that he had sex with Mike Tyson, that, you know. So, but, of course, they're all trying to make a buck. Bette Davis, the beautiful old, she's gone now, but fantastic actress, she said when her daughter wrote a autobiography about the horrible upbringing, Bette Davis said in an interview, God bless my daughter. We had a great relationship and I love her and she loves me. But if you wrote the book about what we had in between us, she would have sold 3 copies. Now she's selling 13 million. Good for her.
Tina Crawford.
Yeah. I guess you're right. My mom did pay some taxes. Now that I look back on it. You're right.
That's
a little bit harsh. I've reconsidered.
No, but it is like when you see the news and you say the Post. I look at the Post because I'm nostalgic, living in Brooklyn Heights for many years. And New York Post was always there. But it's like all this hype about famous people and doing things. It's like we're not reporting on the real issue anymore.
I got to also say, as a guy who's been around boxers a lot, first off, they get their hands taped out, you know, probably a couple hours before they go out there, big time taped. Then there's the low foul protector.
Oh, yeah.
They're wearing that. They ain't free balling it under their shorts. They ain't going fucking commando under their shorts. It's a big leather elastic belt with a cup. Built. It was Max Bat. I don't know if you can find it, but chronicled in my boxing movie, The Hammer, I had to take a piss.
How?
Before the fight.
With no hands and no
Ozzy
way to...
Ozzy had to broker the deal.
Ozzy had to help me get the low foul protector down. It's tough to do. So he couldn't really do it moments before he went out there because the gloves have to be laced and taped. Yeah. Your hands have to be taped. Low foul protector. Maybe a little earlier that afternoon. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't
not tucked
like
away in the changing
do
room.
It
on the walk to the ring.
Right. He'd cock his neck and go crack his knuckles and go, all right, it's showtime. Like that. No, this is hours. You need some time before that.
Well, to be fair to his memory, perhaps the lady just sucked him off.
Oh, yeah.
Trina, please don't be crying.
But she's still got a low foul. She's got a,
but can't she move that?
She could deal with the low foul protector.
Anyway.
All right.
Let's talking Norwegian.
Let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Oh,
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
I wonder if we can find that scene.
Yeah, we're scrubbing through.
You scrub.
I believe there's a similar scene in Creed, right, Brian?
I don't know about Gage.
Oh my God!
Somewhere in the middle,
where he has to go to the bathroom,
movie,
and he has the tape.
I
on.
Only remember The Hammer. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. The name of the movie, and we'll see if you find it. Raise your hand. The Grand Duke of Corsica. It's available now on video on demand and on demand. Very interesting.
It's really good.
Movie and a very good movie. And Peter, I hope you're proud of it. And come back in and, you know, when you got your next project.
I'm happy to be here. This was really fun, I must say. It was real fun. I would gladly do it again.
Well, we're happy.
Now I have to go to the bathroom and take off my jock strap.
We understand.
Good luck.
You understand.
Yeah. We do understand. Thank you so much, Peter, for joining us.
Yeah. Then I have to go boxing.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Peter. Brea Improv, December 15th. Two shows. TJ Miller, Patrick Warburton's going to join me up there. We're taping those shows. And then we'll all be in Portland coming up on the December 22nd, 23rd at Helium Comedy Club. And you can check out all our docs, Shelby, American, and Uppity, and the 24-Hour War. And there's Nikki Lotta doc on there on our Chassis channel, 687 on Pluto TV. And did you find that? Oh, he's found it. Oh, now we gotta look at the did they rip me off in Creed?
It's very possible.
Let's see.
I gotta pee.
I just taped your gloves and you got a protective cup on. I'm not gonna help you.
Oh, the great Ozzy.
Oh, gotta go down and to the left.
Oh, it's Dean, don't find me.
Hurry. Hurry.
It's too hard, man. It's too hard.
Quit complaining.
I no sign up for this.
You can watch it on YouTube?
Yeah.
Oh, well, there it is, everybody. All right, until next time, Adam Kroll, Gina Grad, Mull Bryan, and Peter Stormare saying mahalo.
Keep your mouth shut.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. Catch Gina Grad on the podcast, Easy Listening, Paul Bryan on the film, Paul, the rest of us on the water cooler. And get your tickets to see Adam Carolla live coming up in Brea. Two shows in December. They will sell out. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, Geico, do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, right? You know, it's hard work out there. Owning, renting. You want to save some money? How about you bundle? Bundle your policies at Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle the homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you got so much to do already. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save at Geico. That is geico.com today. That's geico.com.